Let's tell you more about the city of more than 2 million people in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. It is under siege. Goma has come under the hold of M23 rebels who are allegedly backed by Rwanda. And since their takeover, civilians have been displaced as they evacuate. Private military contractors and Congolese soldiers have abandoned arms and fled. The eastern part of the DRC where this is happening is rich with minerals that make, for instance, the phone that may be in your hand right now, the electric vehicle you are driving, or the gold chain on your neck, to mention but a few. Dr. Nils Bakkeberg is the founder and director of Project Blue. He joins us to take a look at the supply chain of minerals in the midst of the conflict. Thank you very much, Doc, for your time this evening. If you speak to anyone from the DRC, they will tell you they've known no peace from the days of Leopold to date. Help us firstly understand how businesses thrive in conflict areas like this one.
Hi, thank you very much for having me here. I mean, firstly, to dig into the DRC and businesses thriving here, I mean, let's focus in on sort of raw material supplies and landscape, right? So these leverage geological heritage, right? So much like South Africa's heritage in gold and diamonds, chrome and manganese, the DRC is rich in a variety of raw materials, as you've mentioned. You know, primarily when we think about the DRC, we know about the copper cobalt belt, the copper belt between Lubumbashi and Kolwezi. But yeah, in the conflict area towards the east, it's, you know, the conflict minerals known as the 3TGs. These are things like tin, tantalum, and tungsten, and gold, as you pointed out, going into a variety of electronics and important parts of the landscape. Well, fundamentally, the DRC and artisanal mining, so we're talking here a lot of small-scale mining, though there are some exceptions to large mines, tin being an example where one of the largest mines globally is based. The BC Tin Mine accounts for significant global proportion. But a lot of this artisanal material finds its way out between the DRC and Rwandan border, and goes across into China and Asia to being converted into its metal form and processed into technology applications. So really, yeah, it's the demand for these electronic systems that require it. And the DRC is what we sometimes call a swing production. So depending on market conditions, when there's ample supply, supply drops down and that reacts to prices. But then when demand is good, this material does start to get sourced quite rapidly and fills a gap in demand. So maybe just pause there as a quick introduction to the situation.
Thank you so much for that context. And so because the situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo has been going on for eons, how will the supply chain be disrupted, if at all, or will it be business unusual as usual?
So for, again, I think maybe worth touching on the typical commodities that people think about when they hear the DRC. So starting with copper, as mentioned, this is in the southern part of the country in the copper belt. An interesting landscape itself with regards to east versus west geopolitics and the Lobito corridor taking material to Angola to the west versus either via trucks to Durban or via the Tazara Railway out to China. Fundamentally, the supply chain there does not seem to be at risk with the current issues in the country, though geopolitically, we could see other sort of indirect impacts onto those supply chains if other actions are taken by governments. So the main market's not expected to be significantly impacted there. People, you mentioned electric vehicles. Everyone's quite curious about the DRC's role in lithium. Mm-hmm. Now, lithium, not a major source out of the DRC, again, artisanal material, but that is coming out of these, what they're called as pegmatite type deposits. And these are crucial for your tin, tantalum, and tungsten type of material sitting along the whole sort of eastern border from north to south. The geology varies and so does the mineralogy. So the minerals for lithium becomes a little bit rich for early estimates further down to the south. So not a major impact globally, though material that's coming out there has also already been scarce because lithium prices have been so low. Mm. So we don't see an impact there. But fundamentally, when you're looking at tin and tantalum, for example, these will be exceptionally crucial, right? Tantalum goes via that Goma border into Rwanda, and over 40% of global tantalum supply comes from those two countries and from that region. So that will be critically impacted. Though, you know, border closures, if they're, you know, a couple of weeks or so, don't tend to have that global impact. But if it persists, we'll definitely start to see some impacts coming out of this artisanal material. So things like tin, tantalum, and tungsten seeming more critical with regards to the developments right now.
All right. Doc, you may have mentioned it, and I'm sorry if I missed it, but what is tantalum used for?
No, yeah, I have not mentioned it. So tantalum is mainly used as a capacitor in circuit boards. So a hard or motherboard or any sort of circuit boards for electronics use capacitors. So it's part of the electronics landscape and a very crucial material. There's not many alternatives. There's ceramic alternatives. But yeah, every electronic equipment spread across the world has probably got a piece of tantalum in it. It's also used in semiconductors as sputtering targets. Semiconductors opens up the whole discussion for Taiwan and a whole nother geopolitical landscape that's, again, crucial to things like AI development, which will require growing demand. Electric vehicles, you know, because everything's, you know, run by a computer and electric vehicles, demand for these electronic materials are really being stretched and stressed, and these supply chains will get another look under the lens.
Doc, I don't even know how to frame this question and to our listeners, so please be patient with me. So the link between all this mining and the humanitarian cost, right? Because millions of people have been displaced internally in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and they face an uncertain future. Who needs to do what? I don't know if who needs to do what? What needs to happen in the DRC for at least for the flow of things to even, not even benefit, but for people to just have life, never mind a quality of life?
Yeah, I mean, this is probably a bigger question for what I'm potentially qualified to answer. But, you know, fundamentally, as with any mining district, be it in rural areas, are exceptionally important for the local economics, right? If that value goes away, there's a lot of value for country that goes in. So yeah, what needs to change is policy, correct support, you know, formalizing the supply chain, right? So that it's not criminalized. These are issues we see in South Africa as well, you know, that are being discussed with our own gold and chrome supply chains. So yeah, it's a governmental level conversation, and then also international, right? We've got different acts coming in that are supporting investments in critical materials, right? Critical materials now becoming a good buzzword with regards to new technologies. And it's about access to supply and understanding those supply chains and risks to supply, right? The DRC has always been considered a high-risk supply with regards to conflict minerals. But how do you improve that is, yeah, you invest in the infrastructure and support it rather than rip it away, because, as you mentioned, from the humanitarian perspective, you're taking more away than just conflict minerals. There's also a lot of livelihoods involved in that. So maybe just to touch on a few points there, I don't think it's a simple conversation.
Yeah.
It's not as simple as cutting off mine supply, because it has other implications.
I really thank you for, I know it's outside of your scope, but for helping us at least find some answers where that is concerned. But I do wonder if you can help us with this then. How long can we continue to mine in the DRC? How sustainable is what is happening? How sustainable is it, yeah?
So the sustainability question, again, is from a risk of supply. If things aren't, if it's considered a conflict mineral, right, there are things in place that will look to replace those. Cobalt, because of its risk of supply, as was deemed by battery manufacturers and their end users, right, the automakers are being asked, where is your material coming from? Can you confirm that material is conflict free? So there's pressure from that. And what have we seen? We've actually seen battery technologies evolve and thrift out, i.e. replace some of the cobalt in its formulation. Now, cobalt stops lithium ion batteries from exploding. So, you know, there's a reason why it's there. So not a simple thing. And this is why chemical engineers are a very well sought after degree at this point in time. There's lots of work to be done to understand different battery technologies. So, yeah, there are some alternatives that one can be looked at, but fundamentally for things like copper, you know, the DRC is going to be here to stay. Obviously, copper much more, you've got large companies invested in this. You've got Glencore there, CMOC, China Molycorp. So all of the major economies are based there. But then for things like tin and tantalum, yeah, it does need some consolidation to support the local mining. There are alternatives, right? Tantalum can also be sourced from lithium byproducts coming out of Australia. And we've seen Western consumers, the US and EU, look to Australia and North and South America for their lithium controls, whereas China is still investing quite heavily in Africa and supporting that local economy. Obviously, its demand far outweighing that of Europe and USA. Mm. So that really being the major market. Again, quite a broad question. One can go quite philosophical into it, which is what one should do. But if you're just looking at the facts and figures, you know, the tantalum out of the DRC is an important part. And it's going to be difficult to substitute that by going to other places like Australia, where costs are higher. And again, that opens another cost conversation. So it needs investment and it needs support on a much more higher level.
Doc, to your point on alternatives, right? I was reading an article about one of the world's most biggest jewelry makers, and they have chosen the route of going lab grown in terms of their diamonds, right? Are there alternatives like that, for instance, lab grown minerals? Is there such a thing?
I mean, we've grown diamonds. When I say we, that's a royal we. I've definitely not done it myself, but you know, diamonds have been grown in a lab. You can create synthetic materials that are replacing, if you're talking about composites, I mean, look at aircrafts, right? They use super alloys and heavy metal materials and in parts being replaced by composite materials, right? Fiberglass, plastics, all sorts of innovative ways to do things. But for certain other applications, that is less simple to do, right? Okay. If you're talking jewelry, what is the driving demand market? Well, it's fashion, right? So it is a diamond, a diamond, a diamond, whether it's synthetic, as in lab grown, or natural, created by Mother Earth deep underground, is a marketing opportunity between De Beers versus competitors making synthetic diamonds. So those will be different. So jewelry is a different market in the sense that it's a fashion industry, has completely different demand drivers. But when you're talking technologies, like tantalum is also crucial in certain parts of aircrafts, right? And you're creating these super alloys that need these metals to allow aircraft engines to operate at certain temperatures. And without them, air travel would have to change again. So some things are more hard to substitute, but there are some smart chemical engineers out there, and they're definitely trying to do that as much as possible.
Doc, thank you very much for your contribution this evening. Dr. Nils Beckerberg is founder and director of Project Blue.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.